Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm Nigel. I'm an alcoholic addict. Well, I'm an alcoholic for sure. I'm a real alcoholic. And my sobriety date is 1-5-2008. I have a sponsor. His name is Al. And my home group is Sober Cartooners in Kirkland. It meets from 10:30 a.m. until 12 on Saturday mornings. It's a really good group. Come by and see us sometime. I'm a little tired today, you guys, and this cold thing is trying to get me too. So I'm going to fight it off enough to share my experience and hope. Is that 34 minutes? Is that for real? Lord Jesus, help me. Oh, God. Good luck. Woo-wee. All right, so I always started by saying this. I'm grateful to be sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because truly this program has saved my life, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I'm eternally grateful because only I know my story and how far I had to come and what it took for me to get here. Oh, boy, did I pay a price, you know. Probably no more of a bigger price than anyone else in this room, you know, because we all can identify with each other. And I'll say to that woman that was just up here, she's a beautiful woman, isn't she, in all of her gothic ways. You know, and it's like she shared a really good story up here, you know, and it helped me tonight, you know, and I appreciate that. I'm going to start. I always share my story, and I normally start off with, you know, my little drunken log about where I grew up. I'm born and raised in Flint, Michigan. I'm a child of the 60s. I was born October 2nd, 1964. My dad was an addict, and he was a terrible one, and he wasn't in my life. And that man had hatred for me that was unspeakable. I had a hatred for that man that was unspeakable. But before I get into the depths of this, I want to read a little bit from the big book, because in the doctor's opinion, it says, okay, let me see here. This guy talks about a man. He said 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. And then I highlighted this. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. I remember being in that place. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. Then it said he accepted the plan outlined in this book. 1 year later, he called to see me. This is the doctor, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but their all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel I had known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. And I wanted to read that tonight because, you know, I can say wholeheartedly and honestly that my life has been fully restored, and the man that stands up here today was not the man that got sober almost 7 years ago. Born and raised in Flint, Michigan, born to my mother and my father, I was born in a one-parent home. As early back as I can remember, about 5 years old, all the way up to I was about 18, you know, my dad was in prison. He was always in and out of prison, in and out of prison. And I was the oldest son of six children. And so you can imagine, my mother worked for General Motors, and so you can imagine what it was like for her. So responsibilities fell on me rather quickly. what happened was, by the time I was 10 years old, before I get into the 10-year-old thing, in the second grade, I was sexually molested by an uncle of mine who was a minister, right? And so it doesn't happen only to women, okay? And I can share that story today because it's not a secret anymore, and I was able to address it in the 12 steps. Isn't that something? I mean, I'm not held hostage by that that dis-ease that brought into my life when I was a child. But I can tell you that I went into a very dark place from within, and that was where my first secret started. And it was a very painful secret. And I never wanted anyone to know that. And my mother passed away not knowing what happened to me, by the way. She died at age 42 of cancer. She was very young. And but the first time I started drinking, can I have some water? Anybody have water? I need some water. Can somebody help me here? All right. So so the first little rebellious thing, even though I was smart in school, and I used to get these little stars, you know, my name originally was Nigel. But back then in the 70s, you know, the teachers had a little pull. So, you know, she told me, your name is Nigel. I said, no, it's not. It's Nigel. It's Nigel. She's like, your name is Nigel. So I cried all the way home with my paper. And I get home and my mom says, well, let me just go up and talk to the teacher, right? Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And she ended up agreeing with the teacher, and they changed my name to Nigel. What the hell? For a long time, I didn't like my name, but now I love my name because so many other people like it, and it's very English and all that shit. And the famous peoples, when I watch movies, you see it all in the movie scripts and all that stuff. Nigel, I'm famous. No. So what happened was when I first started at 10 years old, it was me. I was in the fourth grade in at Gundry Elementary, and this guy, his name was Kevin. I didn't pronounce his last name, and I had my buddy Rick, and we were out in the back in the middle of recess, and we were standing by the garbage can, and he put out this bag. It was yellow, and he had some marijuana sticks in it, and he said, it looked like cigarettes. I'm like, what is that? And he said, hey, if we smoke this, my dad sells this, and if we smoke this, it makes you happy. Keyword. It'll make you happy? I want some. Because for me, I was depressed, and I was a secret, and I was in a lot of pain. And I hung out with other kids that were in a lot of pain, that were a secret. I didn't know that then, of course. Right? And I'll never forget hitting that marijuana stick, right? And the judo class that I was taking that my mom had in, which I was kind of scared of because some of the guys are really good. I smoked some marijuana before I went to that judo class. And believe me, I had confidence that I didn't have before, and I was kicking ass, right? Come on, let's get it, you know? And from there, you know, the rest of the kids, some of the guys kind of faded off, but me, I was the next day looking for the marijuana stick. Then it got into the alcohol. You know, and by that time, by 6th, 7th grade, I was already snorting cocaine and doing the upgraded stuff. And through high school, you know, I was a good athlete, but I would do well, but I would never achieve greatness because I was always stunting my growth with drugs and alcohol. I could never excel. I could never reach where the coach said, Nigel, you're so good. I naturally walked onto to the track team, first day, made varsity, and but I would never stop smoking the marijuana and the drinking on the breaks, you know? You know? I would lay in bed sometime, and back then they had CBs, scanners, and things like that. And when my grandmother, her and I were very close, my father's mother, you know, and I would be laying in the bed with her, and over the speaker would be the police saying, we got him again, Mr. Bannister, you know, And I would lay in the bed with her, and I would cry. I said, "Yeah, my father." You know, this is kind of like some of this turmoil stuff that I'm sharing this turmoil with you, because for me, being the oldest son, I really wanted my father. I did. I was just that kind of kid. I was soft like that. You know, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. You know, that's what, you know, whatever you want to call it, I just really wanted my father. And you know, he wasn't in my life. And I remember sitting there in bed, and, you know, we'd be on our way. And my grandfather, my grandmother was a very strong woman. She nudged my grandfather, "Get up and go get him." He's like, "I'm not." And she said, "Get up and go get him." And he got up. And went and got my father out until they learned he was sending to prison. But that man ended up sending 20 years of his life in prison. And in my fourth treatment center, I've been to 9 treatment centers. That's how hard it was for me. I got a call that my father had passed away. And I never got the opportunity to have that relationship with him. And the first time I did the steps, kind of half-assed, and I got to step 5, and I did some things. And then I had another sponsor a couple of times, and I got a chance to make an amends at his gravesite. That's where I got a chance to make the amends for him. But I never got the chance to really. Well, it's a closed deal now. But you know, I just kind of give that background a little bit so that you guys understand kind of like some of the influences on my sobriety. My mom was a one parent mother, and. So I went to the United States Navy in 1985. I felt like too much gang banging, too much gangs stuff going on. A lot of my friends were getting in gangs. They were starting to do some real rough stuff that I, quite frankly, wasn't interested in. I'd go to the edge with you, but I wasn't going way freak over there. You know what I mean? Give me some dope, some weed or whatever, but you guys are shooting each other and killing. That's stupid to me. You know, it's like, what the hell, you know? That was always stupid to me. I don't know why. My grandmother always said that I had really good common sense, that it was going to take me a long ways. Evidently, she knew something I didn't. And also, you know, this prayer thing that my mom taught me. My mom became a very strong Christian woman, and she never wore skirts after she got sanctified and holy. One of those very strict religions, right? But that was her deal, you know. My mother wasn't a drinker and a drugger, and she taught me how to pray. But the thing is that expectation that came with that religion was way too much for the 16-year-old. I got baptized, I prayed, and I spoke in tongue, and I did all those things. But as soon as I leave the church, I'm going to get me some weed, and I'm going to get me some beer. I'm going to chase women. I'm going to go do all that stuff. And I'm going to do it way more than everybody else because I don't go to sleep. I do it all night and the next day, too. How about that? So I was intense with it, so I thought, by going to the United States Navy, that I could get away from this. So I joined the Navy because there was a commercial said, you can travel the world and be all you can be. And I said, the commercial sold me so fucking good. I called that guy the same day I was down there signing up, you know. And I was gone. I'm like, I want to travel the world. And he said, I promise you the West Coast. I said, where's the West Coast? I didn't know where the hell the West Coast was. He said, California. I'm thinking, yes, California. Beautiful women and beaches, right? I got all this stuff going on in my head, right? Young person, imagination running wild, you know? I joined the military, and they said, go to work, shit. Work 12 hours a day, 7 days a fucking week on an aircraft carrier, right? Serve your country. Travel the world, but you're going to pay for it over and over again through hard work. And I got a chance to do that, and the first year, my first year, I think I was in the military 10 months before I got the call that my mom had cancer, and she would pass away from colon cancer at age 42. And so that sent me in a spin. And not say that, you know, when you go in the military, let me hear it because I don't want to miss something. So when you go in the military, they tell you don't, and you're young, and they say don't get married and do all this stuff. When you tell me not to do something, I do exactly the opposite. I went and got married to a young, beautiful girl that was in love with me. She said, come on, I want to marry you. I said, you do? No, I don't want to get married. But she talked me into it. she talked me into it, right? And we got married. But I ended up having a beautiful son out of that. Nigel Jr. is now 27 years old and married. He's a good kid. He didn't do the drugs and alcohol thing. For that, I'm grateful. Where was I going here? Okay. So where I was going here is that, yeah, my first year in the military, my mom passed away. But here's the thing. This young wife I had, when my mom passed away, I was like, what am I living for now? What am I doing here? What's going on? My motives were always wrong on why I did something good, is what I'm trying to say. I said, you know, I thought maybe my mom would be proud of me someday, you know. I just didn't want to be like my father. If I can do anything opposite of him, then maybe she'll be proud of me. And when she passed away, then now I'm like, okay, what's going on here, right? So I was steady continuing to drink, and I hadn't paid any real heavy consequences. But what I did was I started getting into what we call crystal methamphetamines in the Navy, because they had us doing these long watches. You would work 8 hours, and they said work another 4 or 6, you know, to stay. And then the guy said, I got something that'll keep you up. And I'm always willing to try some stuff. And I thought it was more like this white cocaine that I've been using in the past, but no, it was some other stuff that kept. And I didn't go to sleep for 2 days. I said, "What the hell did you give me?" Right. So, I was off and running back on the drugs again. And before you know it, I got into some heavier stuff to get off of that drug. I figured I better get into some. I know you guys don't really want me to. This is Alcoholics Anonymous and the cocaine. It's just Alcoholics Anonymous and cocaine and crack cocaine and all that stuff is not part of the deal, but I got to give you a little taste of what I did to try to get. So I went to this cocaine, crack cocaine, thinking that I can get off the crystal meth, and that was a disastrous moment. Because I lost everything rapidly, and I got myself in some very bad trouble. And so my little young wife had to go back home. And In 1991, I moved out here on another run, trying to get free. I was going to drive here, but by the time my young wife left, all the furniture's gone, and I'm just sleeping on the floor. I said, well, if I just take my car and run to Seattle, I'll make it there just in time enough to go to school at the Art Institute of Seattle. I'll sleep on my buddy's couch. I had a plan, right? And it's about 3 o'clock in the morning when I run out there, and I get to find out what the repercussions are for smoking dope up and stuff. They're out in my car at 3 o'clock in the morning hauling it. So I got here on a Greyhound bus in 1991 with my Army bag, my Navy bag. That's how I got here. And that's all I had in a friend's couch. And I told them all, I said, listen, man, we can drink, but don't bring the crack cocaine around me, please. I wasn't done. What's wrong with me? I just lost everything. I just lost everything. I should take my young boy back home to Michigan, right? And, you know, they're in the bathroom. I'm out drinking and whatever. And I'm like, what are you guys doing back there? They're doing exactly what I asked them not to, right? I might as well join you now. Over and over and over again. I got cleaned up in 2001. I stayed sober for 5 years and 8 months. Ended up getting married to my second wife. She was a normie. She never saw me coming. Never saw me coming. You know we are the best at pulling the wools over their eyes. There's no better art form than an addict or a drug addict, an alcoholic who manipulates to get where he needs to be. So I get all the stuff I need. I get a beautiful wife. I get a good job. I sell a lot of real estate. She makes a lot of money. I got all this material stuff, and I'm still not happy. In fact, I don't even deserve this. Why are you giving me all this stuff? What's wrong with my self-esteem? You haven't addressed anything, Nigel. You've done no work. Remember, you got to step 5 and you stopped. Did you forget that? You didn't even ask for another sponsor. When they told you to do service work, you didn't even show up to do it. When they told you to get a home group, you didn't even do it. In fact, you don't even think you're a real alcoholic or addict. You think that you could do one or the other. You don't believe that you ingest stuff in your body and you have a phenomenon of craving that happens that's so powerful that your mind can't tell you, give you the power to say no. You want to continue to negotiate with the devil. And I have never won. I have never won, you know. So I got sober almost 7 years ago, January 5th, 2008. And I relapsed with that second wife. This woman was a great woman. She was a good woman. She was a kind woman. She was a loving woman. God gave me too much. I wasn't ready for it. I don't know that I didn't deserve it or not. But see, I never thought I deserved anything. I didn't have high self-esteem in the first place. You know, I always can make it look pretty good on the outside. I know how to dress it up. I'm an expert at that too. I know how to dress it up. And when I lost that love of my life, when I came home from the treatment center and I walked in the house and reality kicked in and the house was empty, and I fell to my knees and I cried like a baby. You did it again. I remember that. That was my greatest loss, you know. And so when I got a chance to recently do the program this time up, have you guys said drive people until you can't drive them no more to meetings? I drove them. When you guys said, you know, get a home, my sponsor said get a home group, I went and got a home group. Now, how I met my sponsor was I was attending this men's group, and we over in Cherry Hall over there, my men's group was Miracles of Progress, the first 5 years of my sobriety. And early sobriety, they would have these retreats and these men retreats, and I'd go out, and my sponsor's up there sharing just like a podium similar to this. And I was sitting about right there where the ladies in purple is, and he was sharing the experience, and I said, geez, he's got 25 years, and he's been through that shit. And that man was sharing his story, and tears were coming down my face. And I could not wait until he got off the point. I think he was midway before I stopped him. I said, will you be my sponsor? You know? And he looked at me. He said, you wouldn't go to any length? I said, yeah. He said, we'll show up at my house on Sundays at 9 a.m. Sundays at 9 a.m., right? But I did. And I'm so grateful that I did. And it's been over 6 years now. I've been on that man's couch every Sunday. My sponsor, I love him. Yeah, I do. You know, and, he's taught me how to live, you know, how to have this program work in my life. And when it comes to this deal, I put it first. Above and beyond all things today, and I'm grateful for that. It comes first. Before my job, before my wife, before my children, before everything. I heard somebody say this in a meeting not too long ago. He said, my sobriety is like a balloon that floats above everything, and I don't attach anything to it. I don't attach anything to it, because if I do, when that thing or something disappears, I'll drink and I'll drug over it. So I don't attach anything to my sobriety anymore. It's not negotiable today. And I hope that I keep that feeling going on for a long, long time with 12 minutes and 3 seconds to go. Oh, you guys are funny. So I guess I'll go into some real stuff here, some current. Some kind of like current life stuff, you know, like life is going to happen in sobriety, regardless to whether we're sober or not. The only thing Alcoholics Anonymous offered me was sobriety. It didn't offer me a perfect life or anything like that, right? I got married again for the third time just about 2 years ago, dummy. And not that she's not a great person, son. That's the wrong freaking move, man. I should have learned. You know, it's like, when do you learn? Why are we so fucking hard at it anyways? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Don't curse here, Nigel. I did it. She did it. She got away with one. She got... Did I do two? No. Okay. Did I? No, just one. Okay. Why are we so creeping hard at it anyways, right? It's like, we are. I am. So I can't call you guys hard-headed, but I can definitely call myself hard-headed. So, it was a beautiful wedding. out by the water, out by the sea, you know, it's beautiful sunny day. That woman look, come walking down. Oh, no, she was just beautiful. I mean, you know, I don't like telling other people's story. I don't think I see anybody that know my soon-to-be ex-wife, because that's what I'm going through that process now. And it's sad. And it's hurtful. I've never felt such intense pain in sobriety, without drinking, without drugging, in my entire life. I would not sign up for this kind of pain again. The only reason why I'm telling you my truth, because that's the only place my God exists. If I come up here lying, I don't get no freedom. I don't get no relief from obsessing over people, places, and things. I can't get back to my spiritual strength. I can't get back to, you know, any peace of mind. That's what we do. We tell our truth in these rooms so that somebody, it's called sharing our experiences and hope. So I'm going to share it with you. And you can do what you want with it. But I don't have to walk around in shame anymore about who I am and where I come from. Them days are long gone. Thanks to this big book. Thanks to that sponsor and thanks to you people. You know, you saved me from some treacherous stuff, you know. This is serious business still for me. As long as I'm breathing, I'm in season. What that means is that I can pick up anytime I want. And for me to take the first one is the biggest mistake. I could not get that for the life of me. You take the first. I'm thinking that, no, it's number 20. And if I could just stop at number 7 or something, you know, maybe I can make it back. Home, get the job, okay, take care of my kids, get them where they need to be. I ain't never come back home. I would leave home for a week at a time. No wonder she had to leave. Any woman that I was married to when I was using, by the time I was done, she was retarded. And she didn't even use no drugs. That's how much worry I put into other people's lives. That much hurt and pain I bring into other people's lives when I'm thinking that it's all about me and I'm only hurting myself. The biggest lie I ever told myself, I'm the only one getting hurt here. Come to find out, it was the biggest lie I ever told myself, that I'm the only one. It was 7 minutes and 58 seconds ago. I love Alcoholics Anonymous today. I am passionate about this program, and I've gotten a passion about life because you guys saved my life. I wouldn't have a life if it wasn't for this program. I'm clear on that. It doesn't matter if you guys are clear on it or not. Yeah, I better be clear on my own stuff. That's why I always, when I sponsor people, I said, take your eyes off everyone else. You might be doing yourself a favor when you do. You know? So this third wife of mine, a beautiful girl, she's in the program, but now she can drink, though. She's okay. Toughest decision I ever had to make in my life. She's okay now. So we get well with our career. We make a shitload of money. Oh, excuse me. That's number 2. We make a bunch of money. We get all this stuff back. And for some reason, you okay now? Really? So what do I get to experience? I get to experience the shoe on the other foot. You may not be using this time, but you're the one that's going to take the hits. Then I had to make a decision to walk away from that relationship. It's painful because when I love for real. Right? And for the first time in my life, I probably loved the right way. But I got myself hurt this time. Unfortunately. And I don't even know I could talk about that with any kind of strength at all because I've already cried enough at night. There was a 12-year-old boy involved that I watched grow up from 5 to 12. He loves me dearly and I love him dearly. That kid, I love him and I'm going to have a relationship with him, but it's the kind that you got to be over here and I got to be over there. What is that? We're never the only ones. Selfish. You know, and the disease don't care. you know, that, you know, I don't, if I think that I can have one now, and I've been trying it out for a long time now. It's like I'm sitting here listening to that, and it's like, man, what do you do with that? And I'm so sold on Alcoholics Anonymous that I have to make a decision. It's not that I'm sold on Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm bigger up here than her, or any of that, except my sobriety is important. If I'm stressing at night and losing sleep at night, and now I'm spiritually becoming bankrupt, when I'm spiritually bankrupt, I will pick up the first one. I better know when I've maxed out on my spiritual strength around other people, places, and things. I better know myself. I better know when to protect my sobriety. So, yeah, you know, Shikshado, I've been there. Oh, had me vomiting all over myself. You know, it's like, didn't work. Walked out of there. Group health, been there. VA hospital, 2 or 3 times, you know. Milam twice, a couple others, you know. It might be some, probably been to some I don't even remember. I remember getting to a point where, you know, I had money in my pocket and I was stealing food. What was that about? Because of my money, I needed my money for my other stuff. My alcohol and my whatever I was going to do with that, right? That was more important for my money to go to that. Not paying bills or anything, you know. It's like, what is that? What's a bill? I haven't paid rent in months. That man let me live in that little spot over that I had downtown for like, and then he let me go to treatment. I came back out. It was just, some people just liked me for no reason. I don't know. Maybe that was God. I don't know. He let me come back to that place and live and get my life back together. I'm just kind of mumbling so I can kill it. 3 minutes and 30 seconds. I ain't going to stop because here's the deal. I'm going to use every second. Even if I just stand up here and just mumble with you guys. So I like doing this. My sponsor knows that. So how he thought, felt, and drank. That's what it's about. It's like, I drink and drug over feelings, how I thought about myself, how I thought about others, how I felt. And then I went and drink to try to solve that. I pour and pour and use and abuse myself in just ungodly ways. I remember like weighing only like 160-something pounds. Look how tall I am. At 160, 175. You know what I look like? Clothes falling off my body. I'm running up and downtown. I broke an arm and a leg. I got out of jail from stealing food. I had an arm and leg broken, and I'm not going to go into all that. But I'm still hobbling out at 3 o'clock in the morning to go get what I need. That's my addiction. That's my alcoholism. That's whatever it is, my isms. I want it when I want it, and I want it now. And I am not okay with me. That's why I'm doing these things. You know, but thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for the program and for you people that love me when I could not love myself. And believe me, there are people in this room that love me when I could not love myself. I'll never forget when I sat on my sponsor's couch, man. I was scared as ever. I don't care. I just had made up my mind that I was going to do whatever he was going to tell me to do because I did not want to die. That's the only reason why I did this program. And whenever that man has made a suggestion, I don't argue with him. I just go do it. And to this day, even recently, as far as, you know, making amends with one of my past bosses that I didn't like and all that crap, when I was going through some personal stuff, it wasn't about drinking. It was because I'm just going through something. And he had me do 4th and 5th. And then he said, I got to go make an apology to my boss. I was like, what? This guy I hate just fired me and crap. And that guy has something to do with the job I have now. You do what is asked of you in this program, and the miracles will happen in your life, is what I'm trying to say. We are all miracles in our own way. And I want to thank you all for being here for me tonight, and thank you for allowing me to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope. I am eternally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I mean that. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.